thank you, Focus, for inviting me. It's a long time since I've been in this place. I used to teach here every week, and it was about 4 years ago, I think, I was last here. And that clock was wrong then. And it became a sort of habit. I always used to say, don't look at the clock, it's always wrong. And you're still saying that after 4 years. It's quite great. What a great university this is. And thank you, technicians, for your dedication. I'm sure most of you, although it is showing a bit of my age, I'm sure most of you have heard of the Hollywood actress and idol Raquel Welch. Ever heard of her? She was gorgeous. In my day, she was a pin-up. And we would all have sort of big photos of her blown up on our wall. I know she's not now, but she was then. But right at the height of her career, when she was, you know, completely famous and still a pin-up, she said this, she wrote this. She said, I had acquired everything I wanted, yet I was totally miserable. I thought it was very peculiar that I had acquired everything I wanted as a child. Wealth, fame, and accomplishment in my career. I had beautiful children and a lifestyle that seemed terrific, yet I was totally and miserably unhappy. I found it very frightening that one could acquire all these things and still be so miserable. That's a phenomenal quote, isn't it? With someone that had everything, beauty and fame and children and money and all of that sort of stuff. And yet it's welcome. It's a quote that I think many of us, you know, if we're honest, we feel today. There is this sort of thing in us, this drive. I don't know whether you've noticed this yet. I hope you have. There is this drive within us to get things, a sort of passion, a sort of thirst. I've got to get this, I've got to get more, I've got to experience this, I've got to travel there, I've got to keep hold of this, I mustn't let go of this, and so forth. And it's a bit like, as I look out at people today, a bit like them drinking sort of salt water. Thirsty, thirsty, gulping it down, gulp after gulp. But the actual drink seems to not satisfy at all. Makes you more thirsty. And in fact, it brings a sort of madness with it. I don't know whether you've noticed that in yourself, or at least in society today. A sort of, I must have, I must go, I must experience, now, I've got to have it now. I don't know whether you've noticed that. Well, this passage, and that's why I've asked for it to be read, and that's why it's a delight to open the Bible, because this passage here is none other than the greatest spiritual teacher that all religions recognize as the great spiritual teacher. There's not one religion that doesn't recognize him as some great prophet. That this great person, Jesus, not the church, don't worry about that, but Jesus, he directly addresses this thirst that humans have, that we seem to have, that you might even be beginning to identify in yourself. And if you're not, he's going to identify it by the time we get to the end of this passage. What is this thirst all about? This sort of, there's got to be something more. What is that all about in the human heart? Well, look at sentence 10, little number 10. Jesus says to this woman that he meets at the well, he says to her, if you knew the gift of God and the one who asks for a drink, if you knew the gift of God and the one who is speaking to you and asking you for a drink of water, if you knew the gift and if you knew the one who is speaking to you, if you only knew. And that little word knew means understand. If only you could come to understand. And it means more than that. Come to understand in a real personal way, not just sort of theoretically here, but if only you knew the gift and the one who is giving it, in fact himself, if you only understood, if your mind was enlightened, you'd ask for the gift. You'd see how thirsty you are. And you'd ask for the gift. And that's what this whole passage is about. It's a wonderful passage because it's really saying, I want to show you, says Jesus, I want to get you to understand what this thirst is. And listen, if you're sitting here and saying, I haven't got a spiritual thirst, then he's going to say, I'm going to show you how thirsty you really are. That's what I hope this passage will do. So let's have a look into it so we can get this knowing, this knowledge. First thing, you've got an outline of where I'm going somewhere on that sheet of paper. You see, there's a lot to get through. I'm not on the first point yet. Well, I am now on the first point. And here's the first point, a surprise. In this passage, it's a wonderful surprise. This is why I love reading the Bible. It's not that boring old book that I was taught that it was at school, but it is actually quite shocking. It's a surprise. The woman who is at the well that Jesus is speaking to is completely surprised that he is speaking to her. Look at sentence 7 to 9. It says, when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food, so they're on their own. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You're a Jew. I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" And then there's this lovely little bracket here. "For the Jews do not associate with the Samaritans." She's shocked. "What are you doing? Jesus, what are you talking to me for? I'm not only a woman, I'm a Samaritan." And then have a look at sentence 25. I love this. I love these little editorial things that John drops in. The disciples, the followers of Jesus, they'd gone off. They were thinking of food. They'd gone off to get some sandwiches down at the local village. And they're coming back with their cheese and tomato sandwiches and the favourite relish for Jesus. And as they come back, it's just then his disciples returned and were, look at the word, what's it say? Surprised to find Jesus talking with a woman. But no one asked, "What do you want?" or "Why are you talking with her?" They couldn't even, I mean, either they got food in their mouth, or, you know, they're just so shocked, they're thinking, "Blimey, what's he doing?" Now, we won't understand this today, because it doesn't seem too complicated, but it was then. You've got to remember, she's a Samaritan. You know what's going on in Palestine and Israel at the moment? That's how they felt for each other. The Samaritans and the Jews. They would love the idea of being able to send, a Jew would love the idea of being able to send, in those days, a 12-year-old boy dressed up as innocent but with explosives on him, and the other way round too. So they hated each other's guts for loads of reasons that I'm not going into. The other thing is, guess what? Jesus is a man, that's not hard to guess, and she is in fact a woman. And look, ladies, don't get all uptight because we don't believe this today, but women weren't worth much. You know? It's all the other way around now, isn't it, of course? But women weren't worth much. Not with their public opinion. Not to talk to you. You don't have a rabbi like Jesus talking to a woman. You have sort of days for women like that and special women to talk to women, that sort of thing. And the other thing is, now just get this, she's alone. And it tells us a lot because she's alone in the sixth hour. And the sixth hour is midday. And it was hot in Israel in the midday. And you don't go alone. Women never went alone to gather water. You helped each other. Groups of women went. So she's alone. In the middle of the day, you don't go and gather water for obvious reasons. It's blooming hot and the water evaporates. But she's there on her own. And when you read the story, you see why. Because she's into serial marriage. She's the original Joan Collins. Or Elizabeth Taylor. She's going through one man through the next. Now, whatever we think of it in this culture, in the Jewish culture, she was a filthy old whore. And even in the Samaritan culture, you don't go near an old bag like her, don't you? You know, the husbands wouldn't let their wives go anywhere near this woman. It's probably riddled with disease anyway. Look, do you see this? Jesus deliberately broke every single one of those barriers. Social, religious, cultural, gender. Jesus, see how radical Jesus is? He breaks everyone. She was an outsider of every inner circle. And he breaks every one of those to come to her. Religious, theological, and speak to her. And why does he do it? Look what he says to her. He says, I have a gift. Now this sounds weird, but this is what he's saying to her. I have a gift from God for you. Now, wouldn't you think it would be wonderful? I mean, you're walking down, you're sitting there in the refectory or whatever you call it thing. What's it called? Oh, right, there we go, I've got it right. You're sitting there having a cup of coffee, and I come up to you, however weird I am, however much my eyeball is twiddling round, and I come up to you and say, oh, hello, I have a gift for you. Actually, you know, you might think that's a bit weird, but you know, if I was a fairly normal and I said, I've got a gift for you, I'd like to give you a gift, you might at least say, ooh, let's have a look. But if I say, I've got a gift from someone who is the most important being in the universe, it might get your attention. Well, here he is, he's got a gift. But hold it, look, if you knew, he says, the gift of God. Now, why is this a surprise? I tell you why this is a surprise. And Christianity is a surprise, and if you've not understood this surprise, I doubt if you've really understood Christianity. And there are people in this room that are rejecting Christianity, and you haven't got a clue what you're rejecting. You're rejecting a whole bunch of stuff that isn't Christian. Christianity is a shock, is a surprise. Religion isn't. No religion is a surprise. Culture, morality, society, there's no surprises in culture or religion or morality. Everybody knows who gets the gift, or the wages, in fact. In religion, if you pray enough, if you give enough, then those people are in the in crowd. They're the good religious bunch. It's no surprise. They do it and they get it. And it's no surprise who passes their exams, is there, at university? It's not a shock. It's no surprise. It's really, is it? If you work hard and you tick away and you'll get your pass. That's not a shock. It's not a shock that Nobby is going to get an A or whatever it is, because we know that Nobby is bright and he's got a good family, the family Nobby, and they passed on the genes. It's just no surprise. He's in the in crowd. He's in that group. He's clever. It's no surprise who gets the job promotion. Those who work hard, those who are bonking the boss, and the people that are actually in the in crowd. But here is a woman. Look at this woman. She is irreligious. She has no concern for God whatsoever. She isn't praying. She isn't doing good things. In fact, morally, she's doing bad things. She's not crying out saying, oh, I think I'm guilty. She doesn't think she's guilty. Her highest purpose in her heart for that day, the biggest thing on her mind was getting water. Getting it in the middle of the day so she doesn't have those horrible old moralizing religious lot having a go at her again. Stuff them anyway. But I'm going to get the water and go back to the one that I'm sleeping with. That's her biggest thing. But she is the one. This is the surprise. Now, if you knew John's gospel, you'd know that in chapter 3 it's a religious one, and he goes without anything. The good religious one leaves in the dark. The shock is you've got this immoral, irreligious culture. You know, she's thrown out of her society. She goes home with something she never expected, and her life is revolutionized, and she becomes one of the most famous women that has ever walked this earth. Very, very famous. So 2,000 years on, we're still talking about her here. That is a surprise. Look at sentence 4. I love sentence 4. Now he, that's Jesus, had to go through Samaria. Well, when you look at it, why did he have to go through Samaria? He didn't have to go through Samaria. Oh yes, he had to go through Samaria. Why? Because Christianity is a shock, is a surprise. Because Jesus was going to one of the enemies of the Jews. Christianity is a shock because it talks about this thing called grace. To those who do not deserve anything. It's for those on the outside. That's who the insiders are of God. And it's a shock. Let's move on to the second point now. Ultimate satisfaction. So this gift of God, this living water, whatever that is, we're going to see what that is now. It comes through grace. It goes to anyone that drinks, anyone, any type of person. It is not like Islam, that really, in order to become a real proper Muslim, I have to fit in with an Arab type way of living. Therefore I put that type of dress on. Therefore I go back in time to not eat certain things, to leave my beard in a certain way. It is not like other religions that says you have to become this culture to become an in-crowd, like Islam, like Buddhism. Like most religions, you have to put this hat on, or this tie on, or this suit on, or this gear on, or you've got to live in a sort of small, localized society that we are now importing to everybody else. Like the Mormons, you have to wear a suit and a white shirt and a tie and have elderberry written on you. I'm not mocking these things, I'm trying to show you. Christianity is not like that. It comes to your culture, where you are, who you are, and revolutionizes you within that culture. It's completely different. So, what is this drink, this water, this stuff that Jesus is on about here? You know, and we're in a chemistry lab, and that probably says it, that funny thing up there. But you know that you are made of mostly what? What are you made mostly of? Tell me. Water. It's amazing, isn't it? You're mostly water. It's amazing, because if you try and get water to stand up, it all flops down, but it gets you're standing up. But anyway, I don't know how that works. I mean, isn't it something like 75% water? Isn't that what we are? Is it, what is it? Is it that? So it sounds weird, but how do they get you to be like you are? It's weird, isn't it? And when you get caught, oh, anyway, forget it. But we're mostly water. And therefore, we dehydrate. And we dehydrate, and we die of thirst before we die of hunger, lack of food. And you know that. And I've read people that have nearly died of thirst and what they've written and how horrific it is. And it is a horrific death apparently. Your tongue blows out in your mouth, goes big. I don't know why. You can't swallow, your throat is like on fire. And then every nerve ending is sort of drying up like one of those stagnant ponds. You know, when you see it in the morning and the sun is on it and it's about that big. And then you see it in the afternoon and it's half the size and it's getting sort of thicker and gooier and more stagnant. And the things that are living in it are thinking, oh, I've got to get out of here quick. That sort of thing. It's sort of drying up. That's what happens. Every nerve ending, it's sort of stagnating. It's drying up. It's furiously scary and agonizing. Now look, you've got to get this. If what Jesus is saying is phenomenal. He is saying, as you need that bottle of water to fill your life up physically, this is what he's saying, this is his claim. Now this is, I'm going to get the title in now, this is the bottom line of Christianity. Got it in, so dealt with that one. But if you don't drink of me, you, your soul, your spirit, I know you don't know that, he's saying, but you, your soul, is stagnating. You are drying up. You are spiritually thirsty. And he's saying, it's amazing, he's saying, and if you drink of any other fountain, if you put the bucket of your soul, the bucket of your real life, your inner being, if you like, into any other place to drink from, you will dry up. That is a massive claim Jesus is making. And he's making it to you here in this lecture theatre. That you need me, Jesus is saying, like your body needs water. But it's even more than that. It's even bigger than that. He's saying, not only am I going to give you water like you take a drink out of the bottle, I am going to place something within your very being that is a spring. Did you notice that? A spring of living water welling, bubbling, brewing up in you. Something that is alive and fresh and vitalizing, and it is touching every part of your body, as it were, or your soul is rehydrating you, is filling you with. That's what he's claiming here. And I'm going to give you that for the rest of your life and the rest of eternity. You've got to go. See ya. You see that? That's what he's saying. Now look. Let's try and think about this. You thirst for all kinds of things. and you thirst for love. I doubt if there's anyone in this room that doesn't want to be loved. Oh, I know the student way. I work with students all the time, and I know the British student way is, I don't need anyone. Which basically says, please love me. But you need love, and you are thirsty for love, and you are thirsty for a decent relationship, and you are thirsty for beauty in your life. You are. And even though you find a great human being who will fulfill much of that love, still, it doesn't quench the soul. Still it doesn't. Because that person, even if they are fantastic, they dehydrate and die. And you can be filled with love, and then have you ever talked to someone that's buried half their heart? And they're absolutely empty. It's like their whole life has poured out. But Jesus is saying, he's saying to this woman, you thirst, I know you thirst. We're going to develop this more in just a minute. I know you thirst because you've had one bloke after another bloke after another bloke after another bloke, and now you're living with someone. Another bloke. And you are blooming thirsty. Really thirsty. But I alone can bring the love that you require, the purpose you require. That's what he's claiming. I alone can do that. That is some claim. And in your life, I won't dig a well, because wells you can fill up and you can build on wells. You can fill up wells. I'm going to bring a spring of living water. So that you never build on a spring. Never. You never try and fill up a spring, because, well, you can try and fill it up, but it will ooze through because it's alive. Who's seen Lord of the Rings? Lord of the Rings? Who's read Lord of the Rings? It's a bit of a boring book, but it's a great film. Much better to watch the film, you don't have to read it then. But in Lord of the Rings and in the book, you've got Gandalf. You know the wizard, the wise old wizard, and one of the hobbits in the book looks at Gandalf, sees the wizard, and this is how he describes the wizard. The wizard's face is only lines of care and sorrow. So he looks at the surface of the wizard's face, he sees grey hair and only lines of care and sorrow. But listen, listen. But, says the hobbit, underneath there was a great joy, a fountain of mirth enough to set a kingdom laughing. And that is a Christian. That is a Christian. That there are pains and awful things that load upon you, that try to fill you in. And there are awful things in this world. But you see, the bottom line of your life is not the things of this world. There is something more breaking through. There is a well, there's a spring. And underneath there is a spring that could set a kingdom laughing. You look at Christians. You read. Don't you just dismiss Christians because of some mental tele-evangelist or some horrific priest who's been fiddling around with kids. They're not Christians. It's got nothing to do with it. So you know that's rubbish. But you look at Christians through history that have had pains and suffering, and you see that although they're pulling their hair out, although they're in anger, there's something underneath that is a spring. You know what it is when a desert suddenly has a waterfall? It's magic. Flowers come from nowhere. That is what Jesus is offering. Okay, let's go on to the third thing. Let's have a quick look at this one-to-one. We're getting there, so be patient. Quick look at this one-to-one. Unfold this conversation that Jesus has with this woman. It's a wonderful thing. Because what he does is here, and I hope it's going to do it to you, he bit by bit by bit by bit draws her in to show her how thirsty she is. She doesn't really realise how thirsty she is until he starts working on her, and this is what Jesus does. And he does it by 8 or 9 interchanges, interactions in the conversation. So you've got some written down there. I'm going to bang my way through these things. First thing is this: he gets her alone. You notice that? He gets her alone. he would never have had this deep conversation if all the disciples had been buzzing around for a start, would they? Because they thought, oh, she's a woman, like this. So he's a clever person, Jesus. He says, go and get some sandwiches, because he knows what blokes are into, you know. It's you again, isn't it? He was just drinking his water, now he's eating his sandwich. Just at the right time, it's really good. And go and get some sandwiches. And off they go to get some sandwiches and so forth. He gets her alone. But she's alone for another reason. She's alone because she's screwed up her life. She's alone because she's messed up. She's going to have to fight alone. And that's good. The trouble is with you students here, you're never going to have your thirst quenched, never, because you're never alone. You constantly fill your life up with noise. It's one of the reasons you do it. Because it's scary, isn't it? It's scary to sit in a room without any noise, so you turn the volume up. It's frightening, isn't it? Because you might be reminded how empty you are. So you fill up all the time. Drinking. Everywhere you can't even walk down the street on your own without something in your ear. Because it's frightening, isn't it? And I don't think anyone will come to God or really know this spirit unless they understand how alone they are in the universe. Don't you ever feel like that? When you turn the music down and the party's gone down and you go into your room at night and you shut the door and just before you go to sleep, don't you wish there was someone to pray to? Someone to talk to? Even if you've got that gorgeous girl lying next to you and you've just had intimacy with her and she's gone to sleep, don't you feel... Is that it? He gets her alone. He's wonderful like that, Jesus, and he loves to talk to you. Look at the second thing he does. He deals with her surface thinking. You see what she's doing? Actually, John's gospel is brilliant at that, but I've no time to show you that. Constant surface thinking with people. And this woman's got surface thinking. She thinks he is going to, when he says, I offer you living water, she thinks, great, I don't have to come to the well at 12 o'clock in the middle, midday. He's going to, this is the first plumber. See, there's the bottom line again. But this is the first plumber. And he is going to plumb in water into my house so I don't have to walk out at the mocking of all those religious weirdos. And I can just turn the tap on and, whoa, it's going to be great. Oh, Jesus, I want that, give me that. You know, she's into still the surface. I still want to drink this physical stuff. And Jesus twists it round and says, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? You don't know anything about the spiritual dimension. You are still on the surface. You are still thinking, this body must be satisfied. Things of this world is what I'm going to get and will fill me up. You're still surface. And he gets beneath the skin. Look how he does it. The third thing, how he does it. He does it by getting very, very personal with her. Do you notice that? He deals with her surface thinking by getting personal. Look at sentence 15. Look at it. The woman said to her, see, she's still into this plumbing. The woman said to him, sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty again. Bring in the plumbing! And have to keep coming here to draw water. He told her, go. Call your husband and come back. I have no husband, she replied. Jesus said, you are right when you say you have no husband. In fact, you've had five husbands, and the man you're now with is not your husband. You have, what you have just said is quite true. Hold it. I'm coming to give you water. Do you want the water? Are you? Oh, yeah. Nice, cool sort of Aussie way of saying it. Oh, yeah. I want the water. Good. Let's talk about your husband. slightly weird, don't you think? What's he on about? Go get, see what he's saying, because the water he's giving is not physical water, it's something bigger. And he is saying, if you're going to have God in your life, we've got to talk about the stuff that you're living for. We've got to talk about the things you are worshipping. We've got to talk about where you're drinking from. We've got to talk about your immorality. We've got to. He gets deeply personal. She is saying, I am not spiritually thirsty, no problem, I don't want any of your religious stuff, I don't want you, Jesus, I'm not spiritually thirsty, I'd like to have something in this world that saves me having to come and get some water, something to freshen up this world only. And he says, you're not spiritually thirsty? Oh yeah, go and get your husband then. Oh well, I haven't got a husband. No, you haven't, have you? Let's deal with this issue, he's saying. Men are running your lives. Do you understand that? You are thinking that a man will be able to fulfill and quench your thirst. And you've been through one man, and another man, and another man, and another man, and another man, and now you're on your sixth. You haven't even bothered to marry him, because maybe that will fall through and you have to get another one. Men are running your life. Don't you see how thirsty you are? You are parched. You are filling your soul up with one experience after the other experience. And it may be relationships that you're after, someone to love you. You might be a sex freak. You might just be wanting to have different positions and different experiences. And you might be hooked to that. Whatever it is, you're hooked, aren't you? And it is drying and sapping your soul like nobody's business. Those men in a few minutes of ecstasy might give you 10 cc's, but actually they're sucking from you. Sucking all the juices out of you. He's not condemning her. He's showing her the reality of what she's living for. And it doesn't work. It really doesn't work. Now let's deal with this. What are you living for? See, I don't know because I don't know you, but I know God knows. And he can look right into you and he can say, I see what you're... Do you know you're going from this to this? Do you see? If only I get my pass mark. If only I get my... If only I could get that girl. If only I could get that bloke. If only I could be free to experience all kinds of sexual... I'll try this. I'll try that. It's like the addicts, isn't it? Pumping in the drug. And there's a high for a moment. There's a climax. And it's all whooshing. Ah, and then it's down again. And down you go. But deeper down this time. And so next time, I need a little bit more to inject. And you go from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. That's going to be your life. And that will be the pattern of your life. What are you drinking? Is it really quenching your thirst? Notice what she does. He gets personal, and if I got personal, I don't know you here, but if I got personal, if I suddenly start getting personal, say I didn't know Sam, I do, but if I suddenly start getting personal with Sam and start drawing him out and start saying, okay, and I start touching some sore spots, what's he going to do? What's the best weapon to do if I'm suddenly... What? Pull back, but how? How does she do it? She changes the subject. That's a great one. She plays the race card and the religious card. That's a great one. Look at verse 20. Or I think it might be 19. Sir, the woman said, I can see you're a prophet. I can see you're a prophet. I know that you're someone from God. Now, because you're someone from God, let's change the subject. Verse 20, look. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is Jerusalem. It's a bit personal. Let's play the race card. Let's play all the different religions card. Let's get away from I can see you're something from God. Now, let's talk race. And that's what lots of you do with Jesus. You have your clever little arguments to ignore Jesus. And you think you're wise. You will. And you'll be pleased with the little argument that you've got. But most Christians have heard so many times, it saddens us when you come out with it. And you may walk away. But Jesus answers her. Verse 21, look. Jesus declared, believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know, we worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming, and has now come, when true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. You see, what are you worshipping, woman? You're just worshipping these things in this world, and they never satisfy. What are you living your life for? Men. You need to get the right God in your life. And I'm not talking about temple here or a temple there. It really doesn't matter about where you live and what culture you're from, and you can keep your culture and you can still know this God. Notice he talks about God as a father. There's a relationship there. But notice verse 23. I've got to finish, but I need to get to this. Yet a time is coming and has now come when true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. When he says in John's Gospel that phrase, a time is coming, or the hour is coming, if you knew John's Gospel, you know that is always and only referring to one thing, and that is the cross. It's Jesus on the cross. When Jesus hung on the cross, he did away with temples, he did away with buildings, he did away with culture. And he said, I am the sacrifice. I am the one who brings God to you and you to God. That's what the cross is all about. Now, how do you get this? When Jesus was on the cross, what did he say? What did he say? What did Jesus say on the cross? What? He said, it is finished. In other words, everything is finished for you to come to know God. It doesn't matter who you are, you can know God this way. But that wasn't what I was thinking. What did he say on the cross? Sorry? My God, why have you forsaken me? So he is forsaken as a man. She didn't know a man like this. He was going to die in her place. But that isn't what I'm thinking of. What did he say on the cross? I will forgive them. So all your sins can be completely forgiven, woman. You can be right with God and know God as your Father, and this will be like gushing water in your life. But that isn't what I'm thinking of. What did he say on the cross? Yeah? I'm thirsty. Do you see that? I'm thirsty. Listen, he is quoting an Old Testament, first part of the Bible, stuff that was written years before he was around. He's quoting a psalm, Psalm 22. Listen carefully. We've only got a few minutes left, so please listen. He says, I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart has turned to wax. It has melted away within me. My strength is dried up like a broken, dried piece of pottery. My tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth. You have laid me in the dry dust of death. I'm thirsty. And woman, I am thirsty, and I will take all the false things that you've been living for, and I will absorb them, and I will be thirsty so you can drink, so you can know God. It's a free gift, and it's for you. And how can anybody get this gift? Look at sentence 14. Look at it. But whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Drink, he says. Drink of this water. Drink. Drink of me. I have come into this world. I am more than a prophet. I am the saviour of the world, which she ultimately recognises. I have come into this world not to add a little bit of religion to your life, not to twist you round and manipulate you, not to abuse you like other people abuse you, not to rape you or use you, not so that you say, I feel raped, I feel used, I can't trust anyone. For the exact opposite reason, to bring you the water of life, to bring you God in your life, so that you may know God and forgiveness, and you may know this welling up of this water that touches every part of your life. And as you grow as a Christian, you become more alive and more fruitful, and it's a wonderful thing. And if you don't understand Christianity, that you still haven't understood it. And so I'm inviting you in this room, you who had never thought of becoming a Christian, to come and drink. Because where are you going to go and drink, eh? To Buddha, who gives you nothing in the end, if you understand Buddhism? You're going to go there? Go on then. But you'll be thirsty for all eternity. But won't you at least look at this water and investigate and find out? This is not piddling around. This isn't some silly little exam that you might get and you get your degree and then you get a big job and then you die. This is not little stuff. This is the most important stuff you could ever hear in this entire university.
Do you know your soul filled with the water of God, the Holy Spirit of God in your life? Then come and drink. Come and drink now.